found his way to the elevator and ridden it 5 levels to the long cableway. The door to the blast lock opened, and Sergeant Thomas walked inside. He saw Hepstall sobbing, heard that Malinger was missing, and put on one of the backup team's Refco suits. Without a moment's hesitation, Thomas had decided to search for Malinger. Hepstall offered to go with him and grabbed a fresh helmet. Wearing the Refcos, they opened the door and headed down the long cableway toward the silo. The air was becoming thick with oxidizer. The PTS backup team waited anxiously in the blast lock. Moments later, the door swung open. Hepstall stumbled inside and fell to the ground, coughing. He hadn't made it very far. The new helmet leaked, and oxidizer was getting into his Refco. Hepstall took off the suit, got into another one, and left for the silo again. On the bottom floor of the control center, Wessel was amazed by how hard it was to open the escape hatch. The ratchet that you needed to use felt really heavy. He and the ballistic missile analyst technician, Danford M. Wong, took turns with it, wearing their gas masks. They were highly motivated. The blast door still wouldn't open, and this looked like their only way out. Lieutenant Frost was still attempting, without success, to reach the PTS team in the silo, Sergeant Thomas and the PTS guys in the trailer, using the telephone and the radio. It wasn't easy with a gas mask on. Frost would pull off the mask momentarily, speak, put the mask back on, and listen for some response. Nobody answered him. And then, clear as a bell, he heard Malinger shouting over the radio. "My God, help us, help us, we need help. Hey, door 8 is locked. We're locked in. You guys get out," Frost told him. Malinger kept repeating that he needed help, and Frost tried to make him understand that the blast door was stuck. The emergency phone rang, and Frost answered it. Someone was outside blast door 8 asking for help. "Hey, you guys, get out of here. Get out of here now," Frost said. "Just get out. Door 8 is locked, so you guys get out." Wessel and Wong could hear the commotion on the floor above them and cranked the ratchet on the escape hatch as fast as they could. Blast door 8 swung open, and Malinger ran into the control center carrying his helmet, yelling that Sergeant Thomas was dead. A cloud of oxidizer followed him, and then Hepstall came in without a helmet and collapsed onto the floor. He landed near the stairs as Malinger kept screaming. None of it made sense to the missile crew. Commander Matthews said, "Come help me," to Frost, and they entered the blast lock. Sergeant Thomas lay unconscious on the floor. They picked him up, carried him into the control center, and shut the door. Thomas was having convulsions, his head nodding side to side in the Refco helmet. Malinger took off the helmet and started to give him mouth to mouth. "This is 3-7, Frost told the command post at McConnell Air Force Base. "The locks are on the safe and the keys are in it. We got one man possibly down, and we're evacuating now." Thomas died on the floor, staring at the ceiling. "Where's the Dep? Where's the Dep?" Wessel shouted, calling for Frost, their deputy commander. They were getting tired, and they needed his help to open the escape hatch. The light grew dimmer as the control center filled with oxidizer. Malinger didn't want to leave Thomas behind. It seemed wrong. After getting knocked down by the powerful stream of oxidizer, Malinger had gotten lost in the silo near the base of the missile, unable to see more than a few feet, unaware that Hepstall had taken the elevator and left him down there. Sergeant Thomas had found him and brought him out, and now Malinger didn't want to leave Thomas on the floor. "We'll get him later," Frost said, heading downstairs to work on the hatch. Matthews helped Malinger and Hepstall down the stairs and then helped them take off their Refco suits. They said their skin was burning. "My God, please help me," Hepstall said. "It's in here with me. It's with me." Matthews went back upstairs and checked the other 2 levels of the control center, looking for stragglers just in case. The cloud of oxidizer was now so thick that he couldn't see more than 2 or 3 feet ahead. The escape hatch was open, finally. Wessel went into it first, crawled through the tunnel and climbed the ladder as fast as he could. It felt like climbing up a chimney full of smoke as the oxidizer filled the narrow air shaft. At the top, Wessel pulled the pins and then pushed the metal grating open with his head. Wong was right behind him, and then Frost, who'd paused every few rungs to pull Hepstall up the ladder. Frost wanted to help him, and didn't want him falling onto Malinger. Lieutenant Matthews went last, closing the hatch behind him to trap the oxidizer in the control center. The missile crew carried the two injured PTS technicians to the emergency showers on the hard stand to rinse them off. The showers didn't work. "Get them under the fire hydrant," Matthews said. The crew put Hepstall and Malinger in front of the hydrant and turned it on. Water poured out, and then after a few seconds the hydrant sputtered air and quit. They had to get these men rinsed off immediately, but the gate to the launch complex was locked. No one had remembered to unlock it before abandoning the control center, and the trucks were parked on the other side of the fence. With help from some of the PTS technicians, the missile crew carried Hepstall and Malinger through the breakaway panel in the fence and placed them in the bed of a pickup. The crew drove to a nearby farmhouse and warned the occupants that deadly fumes were rising from the silo. Wong said to leave the area at once, and Frost asked to use their phone. Wessel found a garden hose in the backyard. After spraying the two airmen with water, they drove Hepstall and Malinger to the nearest hospital. A cloud of oxidizer floated from the launch complex, extending for about a mile and drifting toward the town of Rock, Kansas. The cloud looked like a dark, ominous thunderhead. Local residents didn't know what it was, and the cars and trucks on Highway 77 drove right through it. Air Force security police soon evacuated the roughly 200 inhabitants of Rock. Sergeant Thomas had been left behind, and none of the PTS crew members felt right about that. Even though he was gone, they thought,